when Parshas Chayesara begins, Avraham Avinu wants to buy a burial plot for Sarah. So Avram goes to Bnei Ches, and the Torah says, Avram says to Bnei Ches, Gir v'soshav anochi imachem, I am a stranger and a resident among you. Gir v'soshav anochi imachem. So there are two questions one can raise. First, what message was Avram trying to convey? Here he is, he's introducing his request to buy the Maaseh Machpelah, and he starts with Ger v'soshav anochi imachem. What message was he trying to convey? And second, as far as a shot in the words, you know, there appears to be an inherent tension between Ger and Toshav. The word Ger is a stranger, a foreigner, an outsider. Toshav means a resident, a citizen, someone who's part of the scene. He's part of the crowd. You know, he lives there. He's a member of society. He's not a Ger. He's not a foreigner. There's a bit of a tension between them. So these questions were discussed by the Mefarshim. Rashi gives a pshat, the Ramban, the Ibn Ezra, others as well. This is a famous question. So there's an approach of Rav Soloveitchik, the Rav Zatzal. It's in Reflections of the Rav, Volume 1, Chapter 16, where he developed an approach to these questions. And I think the approach he developed has a lot of relevance for those of us who are trying to live as Bnei Torah in a generally secular society, it's a very important idea. So the Rav explained as follows. The Rav says that Avram's self-description reflects the role of a Jew living in a secular country or society. And that is that there is a dual status. There's a dual status that a Jew has when he's living in a secular society. On the one hand, he was a resident. He's a toshav, like other inhabitants of Canaan. I'm reading and paraphrasing from the Rav's article. He shares with them a concern for the welfare of society. He digs wells. He contributes to the progress of the country in loyalty to its government institutions. Here he's a fellow citizen. You know, Avram was. He cares about the physical progress of society. You know, you want to have a good medical system, a transportation system, economic growth, etc. You're a resident of the society, and that's what Avram was. Avram was a wealthy man. Avram contributed to the economy. Avram dug wells. Now, you know, Avram dug the wells. You know, one of his reasons was to do chesed, and we know that by the wells, Avram would spread Hashem's name, and to cure by the wells. That's true. But the wells also were part of developing society. You know, you develop the digging wells is one way of developing the agriculture in the society, and you know, that's part of being you know, if you dig a well, so that you can live there, there's water to drink, and you can have agriculture. So Avram was a citizen. He's a toshav, and he was saying, you know, he was mentioning that he's a toshav. However, there's another aspect to a Jew's self-description, to a Jew's dual status. And this other aspect is actually more important, and this other aspect is the spiritual. There's a spiritual aspect of a person's existence. And regarding spiritual issues, a Jew has to be a stranger, a ger, within the secular country in which he lives. The value system of this country might be very different from his own. A Jew's spiritual life is based on the Torah. In this area, he's a foreigner. He's a stranger. We have a different approach. The Jews have another identity, the Rav explains, which he does not share with the rest of mankind. It's based on the bris he made with Hashem at Har Sinai over 3,000 years ago. Oh, and here you're a ger. When it comes to spiritual, moral issues, you're a ger. So this is what Avram was saying to Bnei Ches. He's saying, listen, even though I'm a toshav, I'm a citizen, I'm a, you know, part of society, I'm also a ger. Anything religious, anything spiritual, I am different than you guys. I'm a stranger. I have a different approach. So Avram is saying to Bnei Ches, I am now coming to bury my wife, to bury Sarah. Burying Sarah is a religious act. I have rules and regulations about how I want to do it. I can't go bury Sarah in the local county cemetery. I have to buy my own. That's what Avram was explaining to the B'nai Ches. He's explaining his self description. His self description of his dual status is introducing his explanation why he wants to buy the Maros HaFel in the first place. He's a ger, and he can't make do with whatever happens to be around. He has to do things in a special way, in his own way. That's the pshat ger b'socho. Anochi imachem. I think this is a major yesod for all of us. You know, we live in a society, we're part of society. A person lives in America. He's part of society. An American Jew cares about the economy. He wants it to be a good economy. You know, it's good for the Jews if there's a good economy. B, it's good for the Goyim too. And I'm part of this country, and you know, Hashem cares about Goyim. Hashem helps Goyim. I want to help out Goyim too. And I'm happy that the Goyim around me have a good economy and things are going well. A road system. I'm interested in a good road system. You know, you need good roads to drive to shul, to drive to yeshiva. One needs good roads to go to the hospital. You know, if a person's sick, or you know, you're having a baby. Jews have more children on the average. So you want a good road system that to get to the hospitals. You know, and I care about having a good road system. It's good for the economy in general. You know, they say that Moshe Feinstein voted in all the elections. It says in the Sfarim he voted even in the primaries. That's already a chiddush, to vote in the primaries. And I'm not sure of the explanation why. I'm not sure exactly. I think Moshe writes in the Sfarim in a few places that we have to be thankful to Hashem that we have a country where they allow the Jews, it's a democracy, and they allow the Jews to live the way they want. You know, Moshe was coming from Russia, where the reason Rav Moshe coming from Russia, and Russia with the pogroms and the governmental controls against religion, but the main reason Rav Moshe left Russia, just very interesting, by the way, in one of the backups in Rav Moshe written by his family, says that Rav Moshe, on a personal level, was actually doing very well in Europe. Rav Moshe was a rav of a town, and he said he had a lot of time to learn. He said his best growth. Rav Moshe says that part of his best growth in his learning was when he was a rav of a town. Talk to show rabbis nowadays. I think they I'm not sure they would agree with that, but meaning that you know they have different nowadays show rabbis have different experiences. But back then, without phones, without faxes, basically he spent his whole day learning, and people would write him shilas. So he'd do the research and he'd write these long shuvas as part of an answer. But Rav Moshe writes he left Russia when the Russian government was. When the Russian government was forcing the Jews, you know, not to educate the children in Torah. He writes there was one Maisa where the Russian Jews knew the state is very important. So the day before Pesach, they made some sort of rule where like the kids had to be in school from 2 in the morning till 6 p.m. and that way they'd be knocked out by the Seder, something like that. So when things like that began to happen, Rav Moshe said we have to leave Russia, we have to get out. So in contrast to that, in America, where the government allows us to live the way we want to, basically, and to live as Jews freely, so I think as part of it, I'm not sure, I think as part of an expression of it, Rav Moshe voted in the elections. It's part of the Akaras HaTov. He voted in the primaries. So we're citizens. We're citizens we're residents of America. However, we're also strangers. We're gerim. We have to realize that the moral values of a Jew and the Torah approach to life, the Jewish lifestyle, is not the same as the Goyish one. Not the same at all. And we have to be very careful not to let the ger aspect of life ever be affected and influenced by the Toshav aspect. This is very important. When it comes to any more religious decision, I'm a stranger, I'm different, and I have to act that way. This gives you, two examples. Let's say a person, you know, works in some sort of a company or in a firm, and they're going out and they're having a company lunch. They want a big case. They're celebrating. They're going out for lunch somewhere, and it's a trade restaurant. So you're a little embarrassed, whatever. So you go and you don't want to eat anything. So you don't want to eat anything. It's embarrassing. So you order, let's say, a salad. Well, you can't do that. You can't order a salad out, especially nowadays with different questions of the bugs or of the utensils they used in preparing the salad. You can't do things like that. So a person who because he's a little embarrassed, he's part of his firm, and to a person who eats, you know, who a person who, because like, he's embarrassed, allows his, you know, gear decisions to be influenced by being a toshav, that's a mistake. That's an example where the toshav part of life has sort of spilled over into the gear part of life. That's one example. Another example, you have often, you know, let's say, who decides, for many Jews, you know, religious Jews in New York, you know, the some of, you know, how they're going to dress, you know, the gidrei tznius, how they're going to dress. So I used to say, Calvin Klein, but now I think it's more DKNY. She sets a certain fashion standard, that's what's in the stores, and that's what people buy. Well, that's terrible. We shouldn't allow our gidrei tznius and how we dress to be based on what some fashion designer thinks. We have our own gidrei tznius. A Jew goes to the store armed with the gidrei tznius, and then you decide what to do. You know, we discussed that Judaism is not a department store. You can't pick and choose mitzvahs. The picking and choosing in shopping, you're supposed to pick and choose. Shopping is my Rebbe says that Judaism is a theocentric religion. Hashem is in the center, and a Jew has to feel his whole life he's responding to the call of Hashem. Hashem's in the center. Hashem is saying, what do you want from me? Hashem is a Jew should be thinking, Hashem, what do you want from me now? You're in the center. You're making these commands. What do you want from me now? As opposed to shopping, my Rebbe explained, is a homocentric activity. Shopping is man-centered. You walk through and you decide what you want and what you don't want. That by mitzvahs, you can't pick and choose. I remember my Rebbe would say, Judaism is not a department store. By mitzvahs, you can't pick and choose, but shopping you can. And this is when you're supposed to pick and choose. When you shop, you're supposed to pick and choose carefully based on the laws of the Torah. So a person who allows his or her gidrei tznius to be based on what's presently fashionable, that's a classic example of the toshav part of life sort of influencing, in a negative sense, the ger part of life. That's the mistake. That's the mistake. The ger takes priority. Ger v'soshav anochi mechon. I'm a ger first. The ger. A Jew must always realize that his involvement in the outside world should not influence his Torah values. Being a toshav must not lead to a lessening of one's religious singularity. Rather, a Jew must bring and maintain his spiritual values ger with him as he enters the outside world. This, I think, is the lesson. This is the lesson Rav Soloveitchik was bringing out from this interesting, striking self-description of Avram. Ger v'soshav anochi imachem. It applies to Avram, and it applies to us in all of our lives. Okay, that's one idea on Chayesar Ger v'soshav. Next, a second point. When Avram is when Avram sends his servant Elazar to go to try to find a wife for Yitzchak, so it's interesting in Pasuk Gimel he has Elazar take a shvua and he says Vashbiyacha b'Hashem Elokei ha-shamayim ve-Elokei ha-aretz. He makes him take a shvua in the name of Hashem, the God of the heavens and the God of the earth. Very interesting. Okay, Shemai, okay, Haaretz. That's the name which Hashem gives, which Avram gives to Hashem. That's Pasuk Gimel. Later in Pasuk Zion, Avram refers back to Hashem, and he says, Hashem, Elokei Hashemayim. Only Elokei Shemayim. He leaves out Okei Haaretz. This is a very, very striking point. Literally in the same paragraph, practically in the same sentence, in the same paragraph, Avram is describing Hashem, and he gives two different descriptions of Hashem. It's very interesting. Why? So this question bothered the Mefarshim, and there are three standard approaches in the standard Mikros Gedolos to this question. The first, you have the approach of Rashi. Rashi says something very, very strong, a very strong idea. Rashi says as follows, that in Pasuk Gimel, Avram is speaking in the present about what's happening now. In Pasuk Zion, Avram is giving a recap of his earlier life, and when he says Hashem Elokei Shamayim, that's referring to before Avram started his career in Kibbutz. Before Avram began spreading Hashem's name, Hashem was Elokei Shemayim. But now, Hashem is Elokei Shemayim Elokei Haaretz. Let's read it inside. Rashi says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yikra Elokei Haaretz Yisrael Kedix. Oh, whoops, that's the Ramban. One second, what's your Rashi? Where's Rashi? Rashi in Pasuk Zayin. V'lo Amar Elokei Haaretz in Pasuk Zayin. U'lamai lo Amar V'ashbiacha, it said Elokei Haaretz as well. Why? Amar lo Achshav Hu Elokei Shemayim Elokei Haaretz. Shehu galtiv b'fi habrios, aval kishal kochani mibeis avi haya al keshemayim v'lo al kearetz. Shulhayu bayolam makirim bo ushmo lohi aragio baaretz.
Very striking, very strong idea in Rashi. Rashi is saying that before Avram began spreading Hashem's name, Hashem was basically in the heavens. He was al keshemayim. He was up there in the heavens. No one spoke about him. No one thought about him. No one discussed Hashem. He was sort of up there. Hashem existed, and he was, you know, in a sense, not part of this world so much. I mean, we know he was, but in the general world, Hashem was okay, Shemayim, and that was it. But then Avraham started his life of Kiruv, spreading monotheism, spreading Hashem's name throughout the world. And Avraham Avinu was an incredibly successful Kiruv person. The Rambam says that he had tens of thousands of people following him, tens of thousands of monotheists who were following Avraham Avinu. And Avraham says that now that he has been in the present, Hashem is also Elokei Haaretz as well. Avram, in a sense, has brought Hashem into the world. People know about him and talk about him and think about him. It's a very powerful idea. First, going into chinuch, should recognize that, you know, you're doing a big thing. Avram Avinu literally changed the world. Avram Avinu changed the way Hashem's relationship with the world is defined. Before Avram started, Hashem's up in Shemayim, and now Hashem is here, and he's being discussed, and people think about him and talk about him and about what Hashem's role here in the world as well. A person comes to a community, and a rav comes to a community, and he builds a shul, and he builds a school, and he builds other Torah institutions, and he spreads recognition, a deeper recognition of the halachos of kashrus, and a deeper recognition of other halachos. So suddenly the whole community is much more God-oriented. You've made the community into Elokei Haaretz as well. Until now, it was Elokei Shemayim in this community, yeah, but now it's Elokei Haaretz as well. Hashem is mamish here in this community, and you can sort of, when you see this community, you see Hashem. That's what's happening here. When in the world of Avraham Avinu, you saw the world and you saw Hashem as well. You saw it right there, Elokei Haaretz. That's Rashi's practice. According to Rashi, the difference between Pasuk Gimel and Pasuk Zayin is a difference in time. Pasuk Gimel is talking in the present, and Pasuk Zayin is talking in the past. That's Rashi's approach, a difference in time. Okay, then you have the Ramban's approach. This approach of the Ramban is based on his general approach to Eretz Yisrael. There's a very famous Ramban in Bayikra Perek Yuches, where he talks about his approach to Eretz Yisrael, which is that Eretz Yisrael was Hashem's home, and the Shekhinah rests more powerfully in Eretz Yisrael than anywhere else in the world. The Ramban explains that in Eretz Yisrael, Hashem governs the world directly. In Chutz La'aretz, Hashem governs the world through Sarim, through Malachim. Certainly Hashem's running the show, but Hashem governs the world through a Sar. Every country has a Sar, a Malach over it, and Hashem governs the world, in a sense, through that Sar. But in Eretz Yisrael, Hashem governs the world directly. That's why the Ramban explains that if you do a chet in Eretz Yisrael, it's a more severe avera. You're doing a chet in the palace of the king. It's a more severe rebellion to do a chet in the palace of the king. And that's why the Ramban explains that there were a lot of goyim that were rishayim. A lot of masons were evil in the time of Tanakh, in the time of the Chumash. But stone was destroyed. Why? Because the Ramban says, "Lamaila Eretz Yisrael." Because of the Maila of Eretz Yisrael, doing an avera here is more severe. You're like right under Hashem's. You're in the palace of the king doing an avera. That's much more severe. So here's what the Ramban says. The Ramban says in Pasuk Zion. Excuse me. The Ramban says in Pasuk Gimel. Elokei Shemayim Elokei Haaretz. Hakadosh Baruch Hu Yikra Elokei Eretz Yisrael Ki Dosiv Koyado Es Mishpat Elokei Haaretz, etc. That means in Achrimos.
But
V'chein amar hada b'chutz v'aretz dom l'she'en l'eloka. You know, if you live in chutz v'aretz, it's like you don't have a god. What does that mean? Of course, the person in chutz v'aretz has a god. But it means that you're not living in the place where Hashem's control is as direct. So it's as if you don't have an elokim, because the ashkacha, the level of ashkacha shrina, is a little less because you're outside Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramban says in pasuk gimel, Avraham Avinu, he's standing in Eretz Yisrael, and in Eretz Yisrael Hashem is okay shalom v'kei haaretz. In pasuk zayin, when Avraham is referring back to when Hashem first called out to him and first told him to come to Eretz Yisrael, he's referring back in history to when he was in chutz v'aretz, and in chutz v'aretz Hashem is only okay shemayim. So according to the Ramban, the difference in sukkim, it is a difference in time as well, but the focus of the difference, it's a difference in place. It's a difference in place. Pasuk Gimel, the place is Eretz Yisrael. Pasuk Zayin, the place is Chutz Laaretz, and it's Chutz Laaretz. So the Hashem is only okay Shemayim. In Eretz Yisrael, Hashem is okay Shemayim, okay Aretz. In Chutz Laaretz, Hashem is okay Shemayim. So that's the Ramban's approach, a difference in place. Then you have the approach of the Ibn Ezra. It's a little less clear, but I'll say over the Ibn Ezra the way I heard it from my Rebbe, Rabbi Lichtenstein Shlita, how he explained the Ibn Ezra. Let's read the Ibn Ezra Pasuk Gimel. Okay, Shema B'kei Aretz, B'makom Hazeh, Ki Bas Ploni L'Ploni Ba'aretz Min HaShemayim, V'Hu Sod. Ki Bas Ploni L'Ploni Ba'aretz Min HaShemayim. So, Rabbi Lichtenstein explained as follows. He thinks this Ibn Ezra is saying the difference between the psukim is not a difference of time, like Rashi. It isn't a difference of place, like the Ramban. It's rather a difference of topic, of what's being discussed. And he explained as follows. Avraham Avinu here is discussing finding a wife for Yitzchak, discussing Shiduchim, finding a wife for Yitzchak. Ibn Ezra seems to be saying that you have a general level of Ashgacha Pratis. Hashem governs the world. But then, regarding certain areas, the level of Ashgacha Pratis is even stronger. It's more intense. It's more intimate. It's more immediate. One of those areas is Shiduchin. Regarding Shiduchin, Hashem is, in a sense, more of Elokei Ha'aretz as well. Hashem is governing things even in a more direct fashion. He quotes, this is the Gemara, he quotes, Hashem decides who your shidduch is going to be from Shemayim. He decides it. There's a famous medrash that a Roman leader asked Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshua. He said, now that Kriyas Yamsuf is over, what does Hashem do all day? He says, oh, Hashem sits and he makes shidduchim. He makes marriages. He says, what? That's all Hashem does? I can do the same thing. And that night he took 1,000 slaves and 1,000 male slaves and 1,000 female slaves, and he matched them up and he got them married. Okay, comes back the next morning and a few of them have broken arms and they're fighting and one has his eye knocked out, etc. And he sees that it's not so easy to make a match. It's not so easy to make a good shidduch. And he comes back and he says, oh, now I see Hashem is great. You know that Hashem is great. Hashem sits and makes shidduchim all the time. That Hashem is great. You see in that medrash this idea that Hashem plays an even more direct role when it comes to Shiduchim. And that appears to be what the Ibn Ezra is saying. But in Pasuk Zayin, Avram's describing Hashem in general. Hashem called out to me, that's okay Shemayim. Hashem has a general level of Ashkach, he governs the world. But in Pasuk Gimel, when Avram is having Elazar take a Shvua regarding Shiduchim, regarding finding a wife for Yitzchak, Avram says, take a shvua in the name of Elkei Shemayim, the Elkei Haaretz. Because here, the level of Ashkacha is even stronger. So according to the Ibn Ezra, the difference between the psukim is a difference in topic. Well, so these are the three approaches to this question. I think each one has significance. You know, Rashi's approach has significance for someone who wants to go into teaching, into chinuch. You mamash bringing Hashem into the world. It's not just teaching in chinuch. Everyone can be a teacher, in a sense. If you work in a you work in a company, and you're Makadosh Shem Shemayim in that company, you're bringing Hashem more into that company. You're spreading Hashem. You're literally, we talk about spreading Hashem's name. You're spreading Hashem's name. You're adding to Hashem's name. Hashem is now in that company more. Okay, all right. People know you're there. You have a religious person in a company, and everyone knows that he never uses nibble pen. He never curses. So eventually people pick up, oh, I'm sorry, I don't want to, you know, let's say someone by mistake curses when, you know, uses nibble pen when you're around. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you were here. You know, or a person takes off time at work to daven mincha. People notice this. So they're impressed. Oh, you know, this person is a religious man. He takes his life seriously. Yeah, and, you know, people are generally impressed by this. The Rabban's approach certainly is that it's a difference in place. The Swiss of living in Eretz Yisrael, being in Eretz Yisrael, feeling the added level of Kedusha and Ruchnis in Eretz Yisrael. It's the Shechina. It's the home of the Shechina. And the Ibn Ezra's approach, that it's a difference in topic. When it comes to Shidduchim, we all have these crazy stories that we hear, how a person finds his Shidduch, he's heading in one direction, and sort of by mistake he meets someone here who happens to mention somebody else here, and it turns out that's the person he gets married to. You have all these stories that the level of Ashgacha Pratis regarding Shidduchim is... we're all quite aware of, and that appears to be the pshat of the Ibn Ezra. So these are the three approaches to this discrepancy in the description of Hashem's name. This shir, I heard from a Rebbe, Rebbe Kunstein Shlita, he wants to give a shir describing the three approaches of Rashi, the Ramban, and the Ibn Ezra. Okay, that's the second point about Parshas Chayisar. Okay, there's a third idea I wanted to mention about Parshas Chayisar. Based on a shir that I saw in the name, I heard and saw in the name of Rav Salvechik, that's all the book. It goes as follows. At the beginning of Perikop Dalad, the Torah says, V'Avram Zokain Bo Bayami. And Avram was old. Suddenly he's old. So a fair question in Pshat is, what, he wasn't old last Pasuk? Suddenly he's old? Sometimes the Torah says a person got older, becomes old. Here, V'Avram Zokain. And Avram's an old man. The impression, just Pashat Shah left by the Pasuk is, and suddenly Avram's an old man. But he wasn't old then. What about the previous Pasuk? He wasn't old then. Suddenly he's old now. Why is he suddenly old now? That's a question in Pshat, which the Medrash gives an answer to. We'll get to the Medrash in a second. Okay, that's one question. But there's a broader question, a more significant question, really, on the whole parsha, really, about Avraham's life, which is as follows. Avraham, when Parshas Chayisar begins, is 137 years old, just after the Akedah. Okay, and he dies at the end of the parsha at the age of 175. That's roughly 38 years of his life. That's roughly the same amount of time Lechla and Vayera. Lechla spanned 25 years, Vayera spanned around 35 years, and Chayisar 38 years. Now, what's striking is that in these last 38 years of Avram's life, the Torah tells us very, very little about his life. Very little. The Torah tells us that he buries Sarah. That's the first parak in Chayisara. Then the Torah tells us he sends a wife for Elazar to find a wife for Yitzchak. And that's basically it. We'll get to the end of the parasha. There's another minor story. That's basically it. If you compare this to Lechla and Vayera, it's a big difference. In Lech Lecha, it's packed with action. Hashem speaks to Avram. Avram, he's Megai Gerim with Sarah. He builds Mizbeachs. He goes to Canaan. Then he's forced to go to Mitzrayim. He has a whole discussion with Paro in Mitzrayim. He fights wars. He gives Musa to Lot's railway zone. There's the Brisbane of Sarim, and he fights the war. And there's a discussion with Stone. He gets the mitzvah of Bris Mila. He has a Bris Ben Absarim. I mean, it's packed with action. Vayera. Vayera is also packed with action. It starts with Avraham Avinu talking to Hashem with a major nevuah, and then he's Machnes Orchim with the three Malachim. Then the whole Maisa with Stone happens, and Avraham davens for Stone. Then he has to go to Avimelech, and the parasha with Avimelech, and then after that you have the Akedah. I mean, the Torah is giving us a lot about his life. It's packed with action. The last 38 years, practically nothing. Mamash, practically nothing. He buries Sarah. Well, that's expected. He has to bury his wife. She dies. He sends Elazar, and that's it. And we'll see at the end. We'll see one minor point at the end. What happened to Avram? He drops off the map. Avram Avinu basically drops off the map of the Torah for
for the last 38 years of his life.
This is a strong question. Why? What happened to Avram? Why this striking contrast between Parshios Lechon Vayera as compared to Parshios Chayisar? That's a very, very strong question, a broader question on the Chumash. So the Rav answered the second question, and I want to present the Rav's answer to the second question in the context of a medrash. I'm not aware that the Rav quoted this medrash, but I think it fits very well. There's a medrash which relates to the first question, that suddenly Avram's old, and I think that what the Rav said, basically one can view it as like an elaboration on the medrash. So it goes as follows. There's a medrash in the book of the Yalkut on Tanakh by Eish Yischiel. Every pasuk of Eish Yischiel, the Yalkut connects to another tzedekus, another woman in Tanakh. It's interesting. You go through pasuk by pasuk. So the Nun pasuk of Noda Basharim Baila, it connects to Sarah. This medrash is also quoted in the Medrash Tanchuma in this week's Parshas Chayei Sarah. So it says as follows. Noda Basharim Baila, that's about Sarah. Kishemesa Sarah, when Sarah died, Kafsa Zikna Al Avram, V'nikra Zokin. As soon as Sarah died, old age jumped on Avram. We'd say nowadays it caught up with Avram. Old age caught up with him, and he's called an old man. That's the pshat of Noda Basharim Baila, that as soon as she died, as soon as Sarah died, he became old. So the medrash is answering the first question. Yes, Avram is old suddenly. Why is he old? His wife died, and old age caught up with him. On a simple level, that means that Sarah gave him support. Avram, you know, his wife was a support for him, and once his wife died, he wasn't the same anymore. And without that added support of his wife, he suddenly felt old. Old age caught up with him. So I think, as an elaboration on that medrash, one could present what the Rav said. The Rav said as follows. The Rav said he thinks the reason that Avram drops off the map of the Torah, basically, for the last 38 years of his life, is primarily because Sarah dies. Now, not the pshat that he became physically weak when Sarah died. No. The pshat as follows. The bris that Hashem made with the Avos was made with the husband and wife team as a unit. The bris that Hashem made with each of the Avos was made with the husband and wife team as a unit. Once Sarah died, once the unit was broken, then Avram Avinu's role as one of the Avos becomes diminished. And in his diminished role, he's now sort of on the downhill side of his life. He drops off the map. He is playing a less crucial role as one of the Avos. That's what's happening here in the Chumash. With Sarah, the priest with Sarah, packed with action. After Sarah dies, Avram, I'll read the language of the Rav in a second. Avram realizes his role is being downplayed now. His role is one of the Avos. It's being lessened somewhat. Hashem has lessened his role. And in that sense, he plays a less significant role in the Chumash. That's what's happening. So here, I'm reading here from a sefer called Shiurei HaRav on page 121. When Sarah died, Avram not only lost his wife, but also realized that he had completed his covenantal role. Avram outlived Sarah by 38 years, yet no events are recorded about his life in this period, with the exception of the purchase of a burial ground for Sarah and the acquisition, trying to find a wife of Rivka for Yitzchak. No other events related to Avram are recorded. Why? Because his task has been completed, right? It has basically been completed. That is what's happening here. The idea that the bris was made with the husband and wife team as a unit, the Rav pointed out, is the pshat in the give and take between Hashem and Avram back in Parshas Lech Lecha. Back in Parshas Lech Lecha, Hashem tells Avram, you're going to have a son. Let's just find the pasuk. In Perek Yud Zayin, pasuk Tez Zayin, Hashem says, after mentioning that he's going to change Sarah's name from Sarai to Sarah, Hashem says, You're going to have a son from Sarah. A big nesa, obviously. Avram, by Paul from Apanov, by Omer Avram, and Pasuk Yuches. Hashem, I already have Yishmael. The pshat of this line is, Hashem is saying, Avram is saying to Hashem, Hashem, it's a big nes. It's big enough nes that I'm going to have a son, but that Sarah also is going to have a son. It's a big nes. Hashem, I'm not zocher to that nes. I have Yishmael already, and I'm not zocher to that nes. Hashem says no. Be'omer Elkim aval, but no. So you're going to have a son from Sarah, because Yishmael Yitzchak. Hashem says to Avram, no, Avram, you have it all wrong. Yishmael doesn't count. I know you have a son, Yishmael. But the next link in the Masorah can't be Yishmael, because he wasn't born from Sarah. Aval Sarah Yishtechol Yered Uchavein. The bris I make with you, Avram, is with you and Sarah as a unit. And therefore, it has to be your son as a unit, you and Sarah's child as a unit, that carries on the Masorah to be the next of the Avos. Avos, that's Aval. But no, Sarah Yishtechol Yered Uchavein. That's the pshat. That's the pshat in the give and take. Avram had missed that point. And up until that moment, it wasn't fully clear to him that the next of the Avos has to come from you. Hashem says, no, Aval Sarah, it has to come from you and Sarah together. That's the pshat in the psukim there. This is what the Medrash means. When Sarah died, old age caught up with him. He wasn't the same anymore. He didn't have the same unit. And when it wasn't the same unit, his role was diminished. What taka does Avram Avinu do? He does two things. First, he buries Sarah. Well, okay, that's covered to his wife. He buries Sarah. Secondly, he immediately begins to look for a wife for Yitzchak. What's the pshat? The pshat's very good. It works out very, very well. Avram realizes, my role is now being diminished. What's my new role, Avram says to himself? What's my new role? My new role is, it's time to build up Yitzchak. What is the first thing, what is the most important thing Avram Avinu does to build up Yitzchak? He immediately tries to find him a wife. He has to have a wife. Because Avram understands, the bris Hashem makes with the Avos is with the husband and wife team as a unit. And if I'm on the way down now, that means Yitzchak's going to start coming up. It's his turn to shine forth as the next link in the Masorah. The next link is one of the Avos. I have to find him a wife. It puts beautifully. The only two things the Torah mentions about Avram Avinu's life is burying Sarah, which makes sense, giving cover to his wife, and immediately finding a wife for Yitzchak. This is the pshat that Rav Soloveitchik gave about Avram Avinu's life, and I think it fits a beautiful pshat in the Chumash. It explains why Avram dropped off the map for the last 38 years of his life, and I think that one could say that this pshat of the Rav is basically what the Medrash is saying, just in a more elaborate form. That's what the Rav said. This word of the Rav is also mentioned in a book called The Jewish Woman in Rabbinic Literature. It's a sefer by Rabbi Dr. Menachem Breyer, a very, very good sefer. It has all the makoros on women in Judaism that are true sefer. There's one called The Jewish Women in Rabbinic Literature, a psychosocial perspective, and The Jewish Woman in Rabbinic Literature, a psycho-historical perspective. It's an excellent, excellent work. All the makoros about the woman's role in Judaism, very, very good sefer. So in that sefer, on page 199 to 200, he also quotes this idea from the Rav. Let us read to you what he has there. He says as follows. Why is it then that the Torah chooses to tell us nothing further of Avram's activities during this long period of time? The answer is that when Hashem entered the covenant with man and woman, it was with Avram and Sarah. It was for this reason that the covenantal promises made to Avram concerning his descendants could not possibly be realized through Yishmael. It was not sufficient merely to be a descendant of Avram. One had to also be a descendant of Sarah. And then he quotes the psukim from Lech Lecha. The covenantal community could only be carried on by Yitzchak, who was Sarah's son as well. Both Avram and Sarah assumed equally the awesome responsibility of the establishment of the covenantal community, and both were needed for its success. For men and women differ not only physiologically, but also metaphysically and existentially. They have two existential human destinies, which are different, yet complement each other, and when fused together form a complete covenantal community in its relationship with Hashem. But thus, when Sarah died, Avram realized that his mission as a founder of the Covenant community had come to an end, and it was time to pass it on to the next generation, to his son Yitzchak, and to Yitzchak's wife. Avram immediately, therefore, set about his one remaining important task, that of finding a suitable mate for Yitzchak, so that the two of them together could together carry on the mission of founding the covenantal community, etc. It's mamash a beautiful shot. Okay. I had a kasha on this shot that bothered me. It used to bother me, now it bothers me a lot less. And that is that at the end of the parasha, the truth is, and that is, the Torah does tell something else about Avram's life. In Perakaf Hei in Chayisara, the Torah says Avram gets married again. Yosef Avram by Yikach Isha, Yishma Keturah, he marries Keturah. Some say it was Hagar, some say it wasn't. Okay. He's marrying he marries Keturah. So I always wondered, you know, how does this fit in with what the Rav said? You know, the Rav gives a beautiful shot, it really seems to fit very well. And suddenly here, it does mention him as he marries Keturah. So the truth is that I found the Abarbanel discusses this parak. And the truth is that this parak, forget about the Rav's Bar Torah, this parak is really difficult. This whole parasha is difficult. It's very strange. Why is Adam getting married again? Why is he getting married again? It's a really strange parasha. Why is he getting married again? I'll read the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel says, Ra'isi lachkor ala parasha azos. Dvarim zarim sharisi ba. He said, Dvar zarma od. V'yos Avram yashi, she's old. V'save yamin. He says, why did he get married again? I mean, it's really difficult. Do you ever know their race? Do you ever know their tribes? He points out that it's very, very, very strange. Suddenly Avram gets married again? What's happening here? So, Gibarbanel offers, let me see, he offers six possible reasons why Avram remarries, gets married again. Six possible reasons, and each one's interesting. And what I noticed is that four of the six reasons that the Abarbanel gives are Yitzchak related. Abraham remarries in order to help build up, in one way or another, Yitzchak's stature in the world. Yitzchak's stature as the next link in the Masorah. And he gives six explanations. The Rabbi gives. He's very creative. He gives lots and lots of pshatim. I'll just mention one of them to you. One of the pshatim was as follows: Yitzchak was saying, "I'm also a Ben Avram." Excuse me. Yishmael was saying, "I'm also a Ben Avram." Who says Yitzchak so special? Yishmael was claiming, "Maybe I'm the real Baal Masorah." So what happened? Avram remarries. He has other children, and then it says, Vayitein Avram es kol ha'shuel Yitzchak. He gave everything to Yitzchak. Uvibnei ha'pilakshim asher lev mesan Avram matanot. He gave them matanot. By having more children, clearly these later children weren't the primary members of the Masorah. Avram then made a separation. Yitzchak in one slot, and the pilakshim together with Yishmael, the Abarbanel explains, in the other side. The point being, by having more children, and then putting Yishmael in the camp of those additional children, Avram was clearly differentiating. Yitzchak is unique, he's special, and Yishmael, yeah, he's with the Bnei Pilakshim. That's one shot that he gives. And he gives other shotim as well. The point being that Avram was trying to build up the stature of Yitzchak. And that's why he remains. He gives three other shotim as well. You should read the word Abarbanel inside. So therefore, according to the Abarbanel, as opposed to this parsha being a kasha on the Rav's approach, Adarav, it fits perfectly into the Rav's approach. That again, why is Avram doing this very strange thing? It is strange. If getting married again, the answer is, Avram said, my role now is to build up Yitzchak. And Avram felt that remarrying, as the Abarbanel explains, and having more children and making the differentiation clear between Yitzchak and Yishmael, there are other explanations as well, is part of my new role as building up the stature of Yitzchak. So I think with this Abarbanel, you really have a beautiful pshat, what the Rav said. Everything Avram does, his focus is to build up Yitzchak. Okay. I think that this word that the Rav said is really a very big yisod in Jewish hashkafa. The idea is, you know, a woman's role in Judaism is equally as important as a man's.
It's equally as important as a man's. Hashem made the bris with the husband and wife team as a unit. And this is how it's always been. The woman's role is as important as a man's. Now, sometimes a woman's role, often a woman's role, is more private. A woman is in the home more. A woman, generally speaking, takes care of the kids more. So, you know, we find by Sarah that Sarah was in the tent when the Malachim came. She was in the tent. But just because a woman's role is more private, in no way means it's less significant, less important. Just because a woman's role is more private, in no way means it's less significant, less important. That's what's happening here in the vort that the Rebbe is saying. Once Sarah dies, Avram's role as one of the Yevos is diminished. His status as his role as one of the Yevos is with the husband and wife team as a unit. It's a very powerful idea. From the very beginning of Yadus, Hashem is establishing that the bris Hashem makes with the founder really, of the Jewish people is made with Avram together with his wife Sarah. So it's a beautiful message as far as a woman's role in Judaism, as far as her importance and significance. Just because a woman's role is more private, in no way means it's less important or less significant. The Rav lived this way himself. He was particularly close with his wife, and he described how he would often review his shirim with her. Like when he would give his public lectures, he'd review them with her first and ask her, you know, about the order and how to say different things. And he writes beautifully in Halach Tshuva that, you know, you don't fully. In Halach Tshuva, he's discussing that. He's discussing the following idea that you don't appreciate your relationship with Hashem until you don't have it anymore. That's one shot that a Baal Tshuva is in a higher level than a Tzadik Gamor. Why? Because a Baal Tshuva has lost that relationship with Hashem, and when he loses that relationship, he says, oh my gosh, you've tasted what it's like not to have it. And that knowledge of what it's like not to have that relationship spurs you to get even closer to Hashem. Because you've experienced what it means. Once you experience a sense of loss, it spurs you to get even closer to Hashem the next time and stay there. A Tzadik Gamor never experiences that sense of loss. He never has a distance from Hashem. The Rav said that's what happens when a person's in Avelus. A person dies, a relative dies, and you only appreciate the level of the significance of the loss once the person is gone. He writes about he said after his father was Nifter, he said, what would I give to have 5 minutes now to talk to my father about something in Torah, something in learning? And now, when my father was alive, I took it seriously. I was connected with him, but I didn't use every spare minute the way I could have. And now, once he's gone, what would I give to have 5 minutes more with my father? That's what he writes in Halach Tshuva. And a similar word he said, I was preparing my lecture this year and I got to a difficult point, and I wanted to go and speak to my wife and ask her, you know, about the order and what her view would be, and then I realized she wasn't there, and the sense of loss was particularly strong. Again, the same idea that we find in many areas that a gadol and his wife, they work together as a unit. Often the wife's role is more private, but it is no less significant. This is a third. This is what the Rav said about Chai Sarah. And again, it really explains the whole last 38 years of Avram's life in a broad way, why Avram really, his role is diminished, and he basically drops off the map of the Torah for those 38 years. Okay, this is the Avram Zakein Ba Bayamin. Kishemesa Saro, Kafsa Zikna Avram.
Number one. And just one other point, and then we'll close. So a friend of mine, Rav Mati Frankel, pointed out that idea can be used to explain the placement and the order of the Parshios and Parshios Toldos. It's interesting, Yitzchak gives Yaakov the Brachos. But it's interesting that right before and right after the Brachos, we find as follows. Right before the Brachos, the Torah tells us Esav's 40 years old, he marries Yehudis, Vatihyena Moas Ruch Yitzchak Urivka. And they were the source of a spiritual rebellion against Yitzchak and Rivka. In other words, Esav married the wrong woman. And then right after Yitzchak gives the brachos to Yaakov, he's sent away by his parents to go find the appropriate wife
by Paden Aram. They said, go to Paden Aram, Kachas Lo Misham Isha, and don't take an Isha from Benos Kanan. So Rav Mati wanted to point out, and I think very correctly, that the Torah here might be hinting to us that this was one more reflection of the fact that Yaakov deserved the brachas and Esav didn't. Rivka saw, look at the wife Esav has. The wife that Esav chose reflects who he really is. And Rivka knew that Yaakov would choose the correct wife if he was told to. So one of the main reasons why Yaakov received the brachas was because he would choose the correct wife. So by the Torah putting Esav's choice of a wife and Yaakov's choice of a wife as like bookends around the brachos that Yitzchak gives to Yaakov and Esav, it might be a remez, a hint to exactly this idea that Rav Soloveitchik was explaining, that the bris is with the husband-wife team as a unit. Rivka understood that, and the Torah is showing us that this is another reason why Yaakov deserved the brachos and Esav didn't, precisely because Esav chose the wrong wife and Yaakov chose the correct one. So I thought that idea fits in very well with the approach that Rav Soloveitchik developed in back in Parshas Chayei Sarah. Okay, we'll stop here.